We take almost all of our parliamentary institutions from British House of Commons, because when we became a country in 1789 and earlier under the Articles, the Speaker was a reflection of the British Speaker. And when I was elected Speaker, which is the second greatest honor, and after being elected member, I had a visit from Bernard Wetherill, who was then the Speaker of the House of Commons in London, in British House of Commons. And he asked me what number of Speaker I was, and I said, well, Mr. Speaker, I'm the 49th. He said he was the 302nd. And I said, well, sir, that's what we call in the United States a put-down. And he said, well, you know, by various accounts, we started in 1258 or in 1376, and several of us were beheaded, particularly when the king was in a bad mood. For a long time in British history, the Speaker was thought to be really an officer of the crown. And as the office evolved, in 1642, when King Charles I entered the House of Commons to search for and arrest five members for high treason, and the king asked him whether he knew the location of the members, the Speaker, William Lentil, famously replied, "May it please your Majesty, I have neither eyes to see nor tongue to speak in this place, but as the House is pleased to direct me, whose servant I am." So the idea developed that the Speaker was, in Britain, not only the first commoner, but represented the House, not the crown. And today, that's embodied in our tradition. The Speaker, the Constitution says the Speaker shall, and the House shall choose, C-H-U-S-E, its Speaker and other officers. But there's no, I think, time like your first term, post your first election, and your first oath of office in the House. You may repeat it many times, but that's a tremendous...
Well, then, Mr. Speaker, you mentioned the word put down, and I'm reminded of that great story you tell when you were first coming to the Congress, and I guess, I forget who it was the chairman of the Congressional Campaign Committee who had the greatest advice for you as a junior member, and then, of course, you went up through the ranks of all the positions and found out, by gory, he was right. Give him a little bit of that. I think that's...
Well, that was the same meeting, the first meeting, where the Speaker, McCormick, said that if we come back in 2 years, we'll pay some attention to. The only other person who spoke was a senior member from Ohio, Mike Kerwin.
Right.
Who was the absolute power in public works. You couldn't get a sidewalk built in the United States with federal money, except that it went through his committee with his blessing. And he was a rather irascible gentleman. And he said he wanted to give some advice to the new members. He said, to avoid the most single, devastatingly bad thing you can do here. We thought this was some kind of ethical violation. And he said, and we leaned forward to hear what that is, he said, that great, great mistake is thinking for yourselves. He said, no, don't do that, please. You know, listen to the subcommittee chairman, listen to the committee chairman, follow the chairman of the Democratic caucus, obey the wishes of the majority leader, and especially, pray God, support, follow, and revere the Speaker. I remember being personally outraged. I couldn't say anything because in those days you couldn't speak up. But I thought, this is outrageous. I'm not going to come back here to Washington to take dictation from some senior poobah in the Democratic Party. I'm going to vote the way my constituents want me to vote and the way I think is right. I made the speech to myself, not out loud. But then he went on to say, but he said, you know, it's so bad when, you know, it's worse than stealing money. I mean, stealing, don't ever steal money, don't ever be dishonest, but even worse than that is thinking for yourselves. Anyway, I couldn't believe it, and it bothered me for so long. Of course, members vote their own judgment, unfortunately. But when I had the great honor in 1989 to take the office, oath of office as Speaker, administered, as Bob says, by the senior member of the House, the wise words of Mr. Kerwin came across a generation of time. I thought, well, maybe some people will at least follow, revere, and support the speaker.